Boeing's first airliner, the Model 40, back in the skies over the Pacific Northwest. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. One of the biggest crowd pullers at the recent Arlington fly-in was a beautiful 1928 Boeing Model 40, the company's first airliner. I got to spend a few minutes with its owner, Addison Pemberton, to talk about the seemingly overwhelming task of bringing it back 72 years after it was totaled in a crash. This interview will appear on Aero TV in coming weeks, but today we'll bring it to you in audio form. Here at Arlington, we have found Addison Pemberton and a Boeing Model 40, the only one left in the world in flying condition. Or I should say, I guess, Addison, the only one that's been brought back to flying condition. The skies went a long time without seeing one of these birds in the air.
Correct. Designed originally in 1925 as a post office contract effort, which Boeing lost. 2 years later, in 1927, they won the first of the airmail contract routes between San Francisco and Chicago and Seattle and San Diego. Boeing built 81 of these airplanes. This was really the first commercial airliner in the U.S., the first success story for Boeing. Without the Boeing 40, the Boeing Aircraft Company may not be here today.
Let's talk about its service as an airliner. When I look in it now, this is a plane that weighs 4,000 pounds empty and max gross is 6,800. And when you look inside, it's a little bit snug in there.
It is. People didn't have McDonald's. Average a woman's weight was 110, men weighed about 150. You'll notice the seats are staggered, so shoulders don't interfere. And they were able to carry four passengers inside, 750 pounds of mail, and 140 gallons of fuel, about a four-hour range.
All right, now, how was this plane used mostly? Was it used for delivering mail, or did they take passengers and mail together on most flights?
Most flights had at least one or two passengers, oftentimes four. The mainstay, the revenue for the aircraft was mail primarily. You could buy a ticket from San Francisco to Chicago for $275, or run the West Coast, Seattle to San Diego for $175.
And that was in mighty big dollars back then. I mean, if you compare that in today, you'd be talking $2,000-$3,000 a flight.
Well, more like $6,000 to $10,000 in today's dollars. If you inflate 1928 dollars to today, it's like $6,000 to fly to Chicago.
So this is back in the day when you dressed up to go fly, and it was an occasion, not a bus with wings.
Well, you were an affluent person, and yeah, you were dressed to the nines. This was a big deal.
Now, the pilot is in an open cockpit while the passengers travel in relative comfort. And I've talked to some old-timers who told me that there used to be a feeling that you couldn't really navigate or operate an airplane correctly, and especially with passengers, unless you could feel the air. We've come a long way from that, but comment on that, because you've flown this thing.
Well, that's still true today. You know, we know that the tube and fabric airliner is going to make a return. And you'll see the pilots of tomorrow open cockpit. Now, in all seriousness, you had a World War I pilot, probably trained in the military, flew Jennies, probably flew Standards. And when he began to fly airmail, they didn't feel comfortable being inside. They wanted the wind on their face. They wanted to hear the wires, did not trust their instruments. Appreciate that their survival was dependent on topographical intimate knowledge. I mean, every rock, every tree. They had to remain in ground contact or they were dead.
Now, tell us about the restoration of this plane, how you chose this project in the first place, because aside from its rarity, what was it that appealed to you about a Boeing 40?
Well, in short, I've been involved with antique airplanes most of my life, did a number of Stearmans when I was younger, and really felt the pull to do something historically significant in that I was a student of airmail history. And overcome with the mission that they performed, day and night, all weather, incomprehensible. And in the 1980s, I visited the Henry Ford Museum and saw my first Boeing 40, was taken back by the number of struts and wires and the size, and began to see if any of these things existed, and they did not. It took me 18 years to find this airplane, another 8 years to restore it. So it's a 26-year sickness with this dream of bringing what I call the missing link between barnstorming and commercial aviation to the general public. And I really enjoy bringing the airplane out, let people feel and touch and hear what state-of-the-art 1928 airline travel was like.
Now, this particular plane had been involved in an accident and I guess was written off as totaled. What did it take to bring it back?
Well, the airplane was only in service 5 weeks. It was a West Coast Pacific Air Transport division of Boeing. October 2nd, 1928, 10:30 in the morning, it hit a mountain south of Roseburg, Oregon, near the small town of Canyonville. The airplane hit the mountain, exploded and burned. The sole passenger, a diamond dealer, was killed. The pilot, although badly burned, survived. And the airplane was on that mountain for 72 years. It was salvaged by the Oregon Aviation Historical Society. I was able to get the airplane from those folks in the year 2000. We spent 8 years and 18,000 hours restoring it to what you see here today.
After a short break, is an airplane that spent 72 years buried on a mountaintop a restoration or a replica? I'm Paul Plack. More with Addison Pemberton and the Boeing Model 40 in a moment. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a conversation with Addison Pemberton of Spokane, Washington, who restored what is now the only airworthy Boeing Model 40 in the world. Or was it really a restoration?
How much is left of an aircraft that has that kind of an accident? I mean, essentially, are you rolling in a fresh-built airplane under an old data plate, or isn't that would be an exaggeration?
Well, it was important to me to consider this airplane a restoration and not a replica. There's about 50 components from the wreck that got integrated into what you see here today, including that very important original data plate, which was huge. And, you know, it's a real gray area, but we consider it a restoration. It's important to me. Some of the forgings and castings still survive. The door hinges, the pilot steps, some of the cockpit controls and things are original. The rest of the airplane's pretty well, as you say, scratch built.
Now, were you able to find parts of other planes to use as donors, or was it just an endless machine shop job?
No, it was an absolute fabrication task. There are no parts, but appreciate the airplane is comprised of flat stock and tubing and wood. It's achievable in a hobby-type environment like myself. We digitized the entire airplane. We have all the original drawings, put the whole thing on AutoCAD, and in an afternoon in a water jet shop, you can make every wing fitting, all 900 wing fittings, in a day. And the rest of it is steel tube and welding, and you know, it's doable for a hobby person like myself.
Now, you talk about a hobby. This is a pretty ambitious, expensive hobby. What was it in your life and your working life that brought you to the point where you had the means to do this? What's your day job?
Well, my livelihood is a company in Spokane called ScanaValve, and we manufacture flight test and wind tunnel test instrumentation. So I've been in the machine shop fabrication instrumentation world my whole life. Since high school, I've been buying airplanes and restoring them. So this is our 19th project. I also have a very airplane compliant wife for the last 32 years. She does all my fabric work. She's with me every night along with my kids. So this is a family affair. We don't watch much television.
Well, and the fabric work, I must say, is beautiful on this aircraft. What's left? What do you want to do next, or is there a next?
Well, the main goal of completing the airplane was to recreate the transcontinental airmail route from New York to San Francisco, which we did last September. I've given about 200 rides to date. I want to campaign the airplane aggressively for 4 or 5 years and then kind of see where it takes me. It's a piece of history that needs to be preserved and shown, I think.
So you really are going to go barnstorming in it?
And I have been. This is running out of the number of events we've attended, but I enjoy bringing it out to the public and And we fly it. I flew it 4 days this week and into friends' little grass airstrips for picnics and fly-ins and all these things.
What kind of performance can you get with this plane in terms of getting in and out of tight places? I'm guessing it'll surprise people at what it can do.
It is. Last summer, we were at Blakesburg, Iowa, with de Havilland DH-4, a Ford Tri-Motor, the Boeing 40, and a Hisso Jenny, and we had a short field takeoff contest. I could not beat the Ford off the ground. He was doing about 300 feet. I could do it about 450 feet. Typically, takeoff runs are 7 to 12 seconds. 21,000-foot service ceiling, cruises about 120. The wing loading and power loading is exactly the same as a Super Cub. 10 pounds per square foot, 10 pounds per horsepower. So it's just a giant Super Cub in terms of performance, a little bit faster. And it burns a lot of gas. It burns 3 gallons per hour per cylinder.
All right, with nine cylinders, I'm doing the math in my head.
27 to 30 gallons an hour.
Okay. What can you tell us about the power plant, and was restoration required, or are those parts more common?
Well, that's another great part of the story. The power plant is a Pratt & Whitney 1340, which historically, if you remember, Fred Rensselaer was the president of the Curtis Wright Company. In 1925, he went to his board of directors, said he wanted to build an engine 500 pounds, 500 horsepower. They said they're not giving him the money, so he quit. Started the Pratt & Whitney Aircraft Company. This was the first engine that Pratt & Whitney ever developed. The Boeing 40 was the first non-military airplane to ever use a Pratt & Whitney engine, which are still used today in Otters, Ag planes. 500 of these engines are still overhauled today by one of three engine companies, you know, Aero Engines, Tulsa, and Covington. So you can basically buy a modern version of the 1340 that we operate, which is the most reliable piston aircraft engine ever made. So that's comforting when you're flying over the rocks.
Well, where do you go from here? What opportunities might our viewers have to find this plane in person the rest of the year?
We're going to Cottage Grove, Oregon, for the Oregon Aviation Historical Society event down there. We're taking the airplane to Hood River in September for their large event, and we're leaving the airplane in Hood River this winter. They're going to have an airmail display down there. March, I'll go retrieve the airplane and then work it again next summer. We've been invited to take the airplane to the first flight of the Boeing 787 Dreamliner, in that this is the oldest, Dreamliner being the newest. Mm-hmm. So when that event occurs, we'll strategically try to get the airplane back to Seattle as well.
We really appreciate your taking some time, and above all, we really appreciate your taking the 26 years it took to put this baby back together. It's just gorgeous to see it.
Thanks for your effort and interest.
If you ever get the chance to see Addison Pemberton's Model 40, don't miss it. The plane is beautiful, and so is that Pratt & Whitney 1340, playing through 17-foot exhaust stacks. Evidently, the judges at Arlington agreed. Addison won the 2009 Antique Grand Champion Award. The video that goes with this interview will be seen one day soon on Aero TV. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.